On this edition of Updates from the Post, Horticultural Extension Agent at the Cottonwood Extension District, Lauren Fick, and Margie Hammerschmidt, Master Gardener, stop by to talk about the Master Gardener Program. I'm James Bell. A portion of this interview did air on KAYS on Tuesday, December 24th. This is the Post Podcast. So I want to get right into this. What we're here to talk about is the Master Gardening Program, because we're looking at a deadline coming up. It's January 3rd.
13th.
Dang it. I knew I'd screw that up. The 13th that's coming up, and we have to get more people signed up for this program. So I thought maybe a good way to start is just tell us a little bit about the program. And Margie, if you want to just launch into that, and then we can hit Lauren. She can follow up with all the information from the district there.
Sure. The Extension Master Gardener Program is an educational volunteer training program sponsored by K-State Research and Extension. And through this program, individuals are trained and certified in horticulture and related areas. And then these individuals, in turn, volunteer their expertise and services to help others through horticulture projects in the community.
But it's not, I mean, we talked a little bit before we got on air here. It's not a huge commitment of time.
That's right.
It's the first year, it's 40 hours of community service, I believe you told me.
That's right. That first year, it's a little more daunting. It's still not huge. But the first year involves about 40 hours of training. It's actually classroom training with experts in the field, professors from K-State that actually come to Hayes and provide the training during the day. To the trainees. And it's about 40 hours. It's 8 weeks of full-day training. Every Wednesday, starting January 29th, is what it would be. And so then after the training is completed, you get a certificate that you've completed the training, but you're not a full-fledged Extension Master Gardener until you contribute back volunteer hours that year. And it's the equivalent of 40 hours that first year that you also need to give back. Just service projects in the community, and there's plenty in place. It's not a problem finding what to do. It's just a big commitment to give back 40 hours. Thereafter, it's easier to do. You're required to maintain your certification as a Master Gardener to get 8 hours of advanced training every year in horticulture-related subjects, and then volunteer 20 hours to the community, give back 20. Again, that's not hard to do. Most of us give back much more than that. But in order to maintain your certification, you're required to get the 8 hours of training and 20 of the community service.
Okay. So, Lauren, from the extension side, you know, what are the details of this from your perspective?
So, as you know, I am new to the Master Gardener program in the extension office. But from my understanding, basically what's going to happen is starting in January, the Master Gardeners get what would be equivalent of a 6-credit-hour class through K-State, something similar.
Oh, so like college credit?
It would be similar. You're not getting the same credit as a college student, but okay. If I was to take a course like this, it would be the equivalent as a college student getting 6 credit hours through the 8 weeks, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's 9 to 4 every Wednesday in Hayes starting January 29th, which is Kansas Day, in case you forgot. And it goes until March, so right before spring break. And I've never been through this process, so it's all new to me. But the great thing about the Master Gardener program is that, you know, they're there to learn and they get to have the expertise of K-State, like she said. But also, I'm in the office, and so when they need help with something, they can come to me at any time. But really, they get to do a lot of it on their own as far as their community service projects. You know, nobody's micromanaging them, telling them this is what you have to do. It really is their own group. They just get the benefit of having someone help them with their horticulture knowledge if they need it, which they haven't needed it a lot. But, you know, in the future, probably they will. And I know that they do enjoy coming in and stopping in and just picking my brain and finding out the new research from K-State. So that's what's kind of nice about being a Master Gardener is you get the benefit of learning about gardening and horticulture, but then also getting to have fun with it and helping your community.
That's awesome. Now, Lauren, you mentioned this a little bit. You are new. You just got into this position here out in Hayes. You wanted to tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you landed here in Hayes, Kansas.
Yeah. So there's not a huge story behind it, but I did go to K-State. I'm originally from Garden City, so Western Kansas is my area, I guess you could say. And I graduated a year ago. And then after I graduated, I kind of had heard through the grapevine that this position was open and that they would be hiring for it. So I held out. And some people probably have seen me around town. I was a waitress at Thirsty's in the meantime. So that's kind of what I did. And then in June, they hired me for this position. And since then, I did put out a survey in the community. I help both Barton County and Ellis County. So during the fairs, I put out a survey and asked people, you know, what do you want to learn from me? What do you want me to help you with? And the biggest response I got is that people really want to learn about landscape design. So that'll be my focus kind of in 2020 is to start to pull some of that info from the survey. But as far as just me getting here after I graduated, my fiance at the time, who's now my husband, he decided we should move here because we have family here. And so he started a business and I came with him and then the rest is history.
Very cool. I'll if you want to, I'll give you that opportunity to give the little shameless plug to your husband's business.
Oh. Go for it. He's a great guy.
Well, I can't say too much about it because it conflicts with my job. We both have degrees in horticulture.
Uh-oh.
But he works on trees.
Oh, okay.
So I can't give the name of his business. I wish I could. I love you, Bo. I can't give the name of your business. But he works on trees. So I'm sure some people have probably seen him around. His name is Bo Fick. That's about as much as I can tell you. But yeah, he's really enjoying it here in Hayes, too.
Well, good, good. And I mean, you've got the name now, Bo Fick. You can, I'm sure, just Google search it. It'll get you there. You can look into that new business there. So we're about out of time, guys, but I wanted to get into the details of how to sign up for this program, where to reach more, how to get a hold of you down there at the extension agent, or just really, you know, if they want to get a hold of a master gardener. Maybe we'll start with you and then let Lauren finish up there.
Great. Our base is out of the extension office at 601 Main in Hayes. So that's always a fallback. They can come in the door, talk to Teresa. She's the administrative assistant there at the desk. She can provide an application. A person can also go to our website, the Cottonwood website. It's www.cottonwood.kstate, and that's k-state.edu. And then on the right, left-hand side, about halfway down, there's a link to the Master Gardener program. You click on that, and it gives kind of an overview of the program again. And at the bottom, you can click on an application. Print that, fill it out, and send it back in. There is an application fee. It's $110. This includes all of the course materials as well as a T-shirt.
And some food. So if you like to eat, come to the Master Gardener program. We provide good snacks. The only thing, Margie pretty much hit the nail on the head with that. We do have an office in Great Bend as well. The address is 1800 12th Street. So if you are a listener from the Great Bend area or even anywhere in between, we are allowing anybody in the region to come to the training. It works a little bit different as far as being a Master Gardener for the Cottonwood District, but you can more than welcome. Anybody can come to the training as long as you pay the fee. And we do have something if, you know, if $110 is a lot, we know it's the holidays. It's kind of a difficult time of year. We do offer a payment installation plan of 3 payments that you can make throughout the training. So by the time you end, as long as it's paid for, you're good to go. I'm trying to think if there is anything else, but you can come in and talk to me anytime. I'm usually in the office this time of year. So you can do that. Or if you want to talk to a master gardener, I can get you in contact with them too. The K-State extension office number for Hayes is 785-628-9430. And the one in Great Bend is 620-793-1910.
Okay, so if you're just joining us from the KAYS interview, we've got Lauren Fick. She's the horticulture extension agent down at the Cottonwood Extension District, and Margie Hammerschmidt, Master Gardener. We're here talking about the Master Gardening Program. You've got a little bit about information already from the KAYS interview, but we want to talk a little bit more details here. Now, Margie, you talked to me, or you mentioned at cost, rather. There's a $175 sign-up fee to do the training. Is there
110.
110, dang it, I got the number wrong. Is there any cost associated with being a master gardener as you're going through that down the year?
Yeah, good question. No. Just that initial cost for the training and the course materials and the t-shirt. Thereafter, there is no annual fee to be a master gardener. There are some requirements. You know, you have to, as I mentioned, the continued advanced training and the contribution back, the service hours. But there's no cost to being a master gardener. It's all gain after that point.
Fantastic. Well, you know, and I'll open this up to both you guys. One of the ones, or something I'm curious about, rather, is, you know, who are these master gardeners? Are they generally, you know, retired folks that have maybe worked in some sort of ag-related or, you know, growing things kind of related field, or are they younger folks? What's that look like?
Well, that's a great question, James. Actually, we open the program up to anybody who wants to be a master gardener. You don't have to have a background of any sort. And that's the beauty of this training, is that you get all of the knowledge to basically be a master gardener. You know, we have a wide range of folks that are part of the program. Margie knows more about this because she's been a member, but we have people who are still working full time. We have people who are retired, people that were professors previously. We encourage the younger people to join. We also understand, though, that they have families and time commitments as well. And so sometimes it is easier for people who aren't working full time, or maybe are stay at home parents. But, you know, we have a wide range. I mean, I'm obviously the youngest one in the room right now, but I highly encourage people my age to come, because there's so much to learn. And, you know, giving back to your community doesn't have to feel like a chore. Gardening is it's fun. It's therapeutic. There's a lot of research on that, too, if anybody has questions about that. And, you know, we get help at the fair. They get to do some downtown markets. What else do you guys do, Margie?
I actually made a list so I wouldn't forget. We do have quite a variety of projects. We have our demonstration gardens, which include the vegetable trial gardens, which is a lot of fun. This is down at the K-State Ag Research Center, where we grow tomatoes and peppers, and the growers actually provide us the plants, where we grow alongside some standards, so like big boy tomatoes or whatever. And we grow these new varieties that haven't even hit the market yet. And then throughout the growing season, we treat them the same as the tried and true, and we get results. We measure the fruit, the consistency of the product, the health of the plant, and then we send all this information back to K-State. And so then the growers know how their new varieties survive out here in, you know, the various growing conditions. So that's
awesome.
The tomatoes and peppers. Oh, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I mean, we talked to Stacy Campbell not too long ago about wheat and kind of the test plots and how that all works. So what you're saying is the master gardeners are a part of that as well, where they're really looking at what works and what doesn't, and maybe even water usage and soil. You know, you're the extension agents. I don't know. The soil where it doesn't go floating away.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever you call that.
Yeah, soil profiles and stuff like that. Yeah. That's, you know, a part of a master gardener being partnered with K-State is that you do get the access to do the research, or you get to help them with it, which might seem daunting to some people. But honestly, doing the research is fun because it's created just for your community. So you get to test things out, and you know, you get to say, we like this, we don't like this. And then after you do the research, then you can start promoting that stuff to your community and telling them all about it. And you're the first ones that did the research. So that's, in my opinion, I think that's super amazing, because you are the expert of that plant. And then to see it on the shelf at Dillon's, or even the local greenhouses, wherever it might be, and to say, you know, we were the first people to grow that. You get to be part of that. And, you know, K-State gives a lot of freedom as far as, you know, if I wanted to say, hey, Master Gardeners, we should really do a program on beekeeping, K-State would say, do it. And, you know, do it well, teach your community. And then if you need resources or help, you just let us know. And so they really do have a lot of freedom to kind of research if they want to as well, because like any job, there's a lot of research that needs done and they don't want to have to do all of it at the state. So if we can help out in any way, they're more than willing to let them try whatever they want to do, really.
Another example of that, kind of making it local. Of course, Hayes has a water shortage and we're always interested in conserving water. So a group of master gardeners said, you know, we think there needs to be more education about the use of mulch, conserving the moisture in the soil. And so we did our research and we put together some different projects on demonstrating the proper use of mulch, not the mulch volcanoes around trees, because that destroys the structure of the bark around the tree, and how to use organic versus just rock, because rock also can compress the soil and attracts heat. So yep. The plants growing things mm-hmm. underneath rock mulches is not so healthy for the plants. And so we learn during that process, and then we go out and, you know, share that information with the community in a variety of ways. So an example of how we make it local, you know, what does our community need to know?
Yeah, and the Master Gardener program isn't just about always doing gardening. I mean, they like to have fun too. They didn't do one this year, but normally they do a horticulture night, and we don't have the plans yet for next year, but we do have one in the works, and I think it's going to be pretty awesome. So they like to do stuff like that, and there is a month or bi-monthly meeting, and we have fun at those too. Lots of food is shared and stories and good times. And then there is, she had mentioned kind of earlier, that there's something called advanced training that the master gardeners have to give back once you have become an official master gardener. And so at the meetings, they will offer as of right now anyway, this is something we could change if we wanted to, but before the meeting, they offer about 30 minutes or so of a video that counts towards that advanced training. So they kind of give you the hours, honestly, just by going to the meetings. You get hours for going to the meetings. You get hours for doing the training anytime that we meet and do anything. So it's fairly easy to meet your hour requirement after that first year.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. But Margie, you and I were talking before about some of the camaraderie that comes out of this, because you do spend a lot of time. It's a small group and you spend a lot of time together. So maybe, you know, you want to talk about a little bit about that and what comes out of just making those connections and kind of networking with people with that similar interest.
Yes, thank you. It is a small group. There's about 20 of us right now. We're hoping to increase that number, because we do have a lot of projects that we want to do, and we just kind of need the resources to do that. But like Lauren said, we do meet bi-monthly, so six times a year we meet in a meeting setting, and that is where we talk out our projects. We, you know, kind of drill down to the details. They're pretty intense, but they're very focused on who we are and what we do, and, you know, communicating with each other. And then separately from that, we have our committees on the various projects. There's, you know, like, I don't know, 12 active projects that we're doing. And so the committee members that work on those projects, of course, get to spend additional time with each other, planning what they're going to do, what kind of outcomes they're looking for, and then, you know, the steps in doing it. And we always learn from each other. That's the cool thing, because, like Lauren mentioned, we're pretty diverse. We do have a physician, we have professors, we've got just regular, you know, folks, lots of different people coming together to share their expertise, and, you know, younger folks and older folks. So some people have been gardening for years and what they've learned and through the K-State program. So as you're doing these projects, being able to work shoulder to shoulder with that variety of people, it's just a lot of fun. Camaraderie is fantastic. Growing together as a group is great.
Yeah, I've seen even research recently, and this is a little off topic here, but in some studies in schools in Europe, they're doing basically assigning folks that are struggling with either depression or mental illness and doing gardening as a way to kind of build that camaraderie. Because not only are you interacting with other folks, you're doing something productive, and you're physically active. It's not just sitting around talking, it's actually doing something. And it really seems to stimulate, you know, the ability to generate better and healthier relationships. I don't know, maybe I'm completely off base there.
You're not.
Some I'd read and I just share it.
No. And you're right. There's a lot of research behind people who have chronic illnesses too, and even just patients in hospitals. If you have access to a window that has a garden below, it actually is proven research that those people get better quicker. So there is a lot of benefits to gardening, and I could go on and on about that too. But yes, you are not incorrect. There is a lot of benefits to it, and it really does. This is my opinion, but I feel like gardening stimulates me to get like more ideas going, and it really allows me to go down a path that's for positive change. And I get really into it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we could do all these things in Hayes, Kansas. You know, we have the perfect setting for this, this, and this. And you know, the master gardeners, I can tell some of them are the same way, because we just generate so many ideas. And, you know, I don't know if people realize this, but landscaping in general, trees, shrubs, that is our life. That's how we survive. It's everything outside of our windows. And so it is a really major thing in our life that we should be connected with. So, yeah.
And you know, and I want to ask a follow-up on this as well, but I mean, because really what we're talking about here is, you know, landscaping is one thing, but growing food, mm-hmm. There's immediate tangible benefits to that, because you get fresh garden produce to eat. So, you know, me, I'm a big guy. I'm curious where that food goes that you're testing out there at the ag station.
Uh-huh. Well, we can take what we want. We have a sign-up sheet where we help maintain the gardens, of course, through the growing season. And so when it's your turn to maintain the garden, and if the fruit is ready, you size it up, you know, you weigh it, you log it, and then you can take that produce home. Of course, it's a huge garden. So usually what happens is then there's a call out to say, hey, if anyone wants any tomatoes, there's a ton there. But while they're still good to pick, if no one else wants any more, we actually contribute this back to the Community Assistance Center, various places where they can use the fresh produce. And that's a feel-good, too, yeah. To be able to give back to the community that excess.
Yeah, and we've looked at doing some other forms of vegetable gardening, because we know that there are people who, especially if you're older or you have some kind of issue where you can't bend over, there is, I forget what they're called. It was actually built for people who are in wheelchairs, but it's kind of like a raised garden bed where you grow your own vegetables and stuff. And we've looked into maybe building one of those and trying it ourselves and kind of seeing how it went, because a lot of people will do the raised gardening, but they'll just grow their annuals or perennials in those. And so to see, you know, could we grow potatoes in those, something that grows below the soil surface? That's something we might try. We haven't discussed it in depth, but there's a lot of different avenues for growing vegetables. And like you said, it is important to know where they come from. A lot of kids these days don't have any idea where their food is coming from. And that is something that we have to make sure they know. Otherwise, we might all end up eating tofu someday. I don't know. But we just, you know, it's important. And we encourage anybody in the community, don't be afraid of the Ag Research Center. Go out there during the growing season, look around at the vegetables and the trials going on. It is not stuff that people are not allowed to look at just because it's a research center. It's there for the community, actually. So we highly encourage people, go out there. And if you know what, if you see a cucumber and you're like, I really want that, call us. We can probably help you with it in some way, shape, or form.
In addition to the vegetable trial garden, which is mostly tomatoes and peppers, at the Ag Research Center, we have also what we're calling the backyard family garden. And it's a fenced-in garden that's typical of what someone could have in their backyard. So I think it's probably 10 by 16, something like that. And there we grow the variety of vegetables. We change it off sometimes year to year to plant different things. But it's a great thing to just look at and go, oh, that's how they did this, whatever. And we've got some really nice compost bins at the back of it with a really nice sign that talks about how to properly create a compost bin. And it's nice to see that in action and working.
You know, I was really surprised this year. And I've done stories over the years with folks both at Cottonwood and out at the Ag Research Center. I'd never been out there until this year. And it's a really cool little campus. There's a lot of things going on. You know, you see the water tower. If you've never been out there, I encourage you just to go out and drive around and check it out. But you see the water tower, you know it's out there. But even as somebody that's lived here as long as I have, you know, if you've never taken the time, do it because it is so cool. And there's always, you know, like you mentioned, the backyard garden. I mean, it's not just active things. It's a historical research center that's got some real history, and the buildings are amazing. It's as beautiful as anything you'd see downtown in Hayes or on campus, I think, anyway.
It's an active center. They have a lot of stuff going on far and above just what we're doing as Master Gardeners, but it is a great place, and it would be a good place for someone in the community just to drive through. Speaking of historical, we also help maintain the Old Fort Hayes Historical Garden. It's a combined effort between the Master Gardeners and staff at the fort.
Wow.
But there we have, it's a really cute garden. It's got the white picket fence around it. And we grow vegetables from heirloom variety seeds that would have been available in the 1860s. I think that's when the fort was active. The officers were encouraged to grow vegetables at that time to just kind of help supplement their diet. And so we've selected seed varieties, heirloom seed varieties, and planted a variety of vegetables in that garden. It's really sweet, and it's fun to go out there and see visitors pulling out the brochure and just really looking at it and contemplating it, and it's a fun thing.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. You know, I was talking to a guy, and this has been a few years ago now. It kind of it shocked me. He had a farm, and I don't even know if he's still doing it, but he had a farm basically where he was growing heirloom wheat varieties from 70, 80 years ago. And he went had the full-on classic tractor. You know, it wasn't a big commercial farm. It was just basically kind of his way to relax. It seemed odd to me, but for some people, growing a wheat field is relaxing, I suppose. But he, you know, it really shocked me when I saw the difference between the 70, 80 year old wheat and what you see today. And I mean, when you think about it, a lot of the produce that we eat, you know, it's different than what you would have seen, especially back all the way into like 1860s when the fort was active. I mean, you wouldn't even recognize some of these things, right?
Right.
No, absolutely not. Especially with research and different genetic modifications. I know that's a scary word, GMO. But it is true. I mean, we eat different than we did back then. So absolutely nothing is going to be the same. Margie probably knows more about that than I do, honestly. But yeah, it's crazy because even like you're saying, wheat, it's none of it's the same. It's all going to be different because our bodies actually were built different. Even if you look back even to like the 80s, you know, we had tiny waists then. And now we are more, I don't know what you call it, more like athletically built, I guess you could say. But just that's because of the different way that we grow our food now.
My mom used to call that husky. But yeah, there is, you know, you mentioned GMO, and we could go on to a whole, we could sit here for hours and probably talk about this. But I mean, the plant development, the way that these things have been bred over generations, I mean, that's GMO. That's what we're talking about, right? Okay. Now there's the new, where they're actually going in and doing gene manipulation. I think people get frightened of that term,
Yes. But
there's really nothing to be afraid of. It's really just selecting traits that you want in a plant, or in some cases, animals as well, right?
Yes. And there are a lot of publications through K-State about genetically modified organisms as well. And this is my personal opinion. This is not a reflection of K-State, but you know.
Your first appearance here on air, and I'm getting you in trouble.
No, you're okay. I just, you know, when you think about the words broken down, genetically modified, the reason that they're making GMO, corn, wheat, whatever, it's to benefit us. It's for our health, honestly. You know, we have to raise our crops different than we did back then because of weeds, honestly. Weeds and insect pests, if we didn't modify things to be resistant to those, we wouldn't have any food. So a lot of the GMO products that we're seeing that people are so fearful of, it's actually so we can eat. I mean, it really is. If we didn't modify them, we'd have nothing because insect pests especially and diseases, depending, like this year we had so much rain and that definitely affected yields and stuff like that. But, you know, if we didn't have those genetically modified corn, wheat, whatever, there might not be much because it would have wiped everything out, honestly, especially with all the insects that came with it, too. I mean, they're fierce insects, especially. And kind of, you know, I'm kind of going on a little bit of a rant, but like there's something called emerald ash borer with ash trees. That's something that started in the east that we never thought would see Kansas. We have it in, I think, 6 counties now in eastern Kansas. And that's why we have to make GMO products, because if someday down the future, if we don't change the genetic modification of the ash tree, there will be none in the United States at all. And I am not an expert on genetically modifying organisms or anything like that, but I just want people to understand that's where that comes from, is it really is. It's for us. And we have to make those modifications if we want to continue to have crops.
Yeah, and this gentleman I mentioned with the wheat, that was his thing. He grows the older varietal of wheat because he doesn't use pesticides or herbicides, pesticides being for bugs and herbicides being for other invasive plants. Mm-hmm. He doesn't use any of that, so the wheat grows quite a bit taller, which was okay back then because you weren't trying to feed as many people with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't even getting close to the productivity yields of a modern field, which the wheat would be, you know, maybe 6-7 inches tall. I mean, this wheat was, he told me when I went out there, he said, it's going to be as tall as you. And I'm like, I'm a pretty tall guy, man. And he says, trust me. And it was. I'd never seen wheat like that in my life. Wow. And I, you know, I grew up in a farm where everybody I knew grew wheat. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen it. I mean, I'm talking, you know, if you can't see me on air, obviously, but I'm 6'5". This wheat was as tall as I was. It was huge. And now you go drive by a wheat field and again, it's,
yeah,
it's short.
It's short. Yeah, it has to be.
But that, yeah, it has to be. That productivity there that they get out of those crops is, I don't know the numbers. One of you guys might, 100 times what it was 100 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I think this summer people were bringing in like 80 bushels an acre, which is a lot. If you don't know a lot about agronomy or anything, that's a lot. I mean, for most farmers, a good year would be 65 bushels an acre would be great. This year we had 80 in some places, and in a bad year you might have 25 or 30. I mean, that just goes to show. And back in the day, I'm not a farmer, I'm not an agronomist, but I guarantee they weren't bringing in 80 bushels an acre with that tall wheat, because you think about when that goes through your combine and stuff, how much of the shocks of wheat are you actually getting off of that, or how much of it is just being stripped and thrown back into the field? I mean, that's the difference with a genetically modified organism, is that they made it shorter so that you're getting more of your actual product versus all the stock and the stuff that you don't want.
Yeah. And we could yep. talk about this at length, but I mean, it really comes down to like the wheat, the head of the wheat is heavy, and on the heavier stalks, when you get the heavier top, the head of the wheat, it causes it to fall over. Yes. Which is why you see now the short wheat. We're probably telling farmers things that they're like,
they're probably, they have no idea what they're talking about. I said I wasn't a farmer.
But yeah, okay, so let's get back into this, Matt. We've completely derailed here. Oh. Get back into the Master Gardener thing. So once you've achieved the title, how long does that actually last? I mean, I know you talked about the recertifications, but I mean, is that like a lifelong title that you kind of hold, or is it just good for a year? How does that work?
Yeah, just to remain certified, that's where you need to continue with your advanced training and to give back. Of course, your knowledge is with you forever. That's the cool thing. But it's good to be active because of all these community projects that we talked about. So in order to remain a certified Extension Master Gardener, that's where annually you have those needs. You have to obtain the advanced training and give back at least 20 service hours to the community.
But you go through the training once, if that helps answer. As long as you keep up your certification or your hours and stuff, you don't have to redo that training. That's a once thing. And then you just, you basically stay a Master Gardener, some people, until the day that they die, literally. Okay. So we do have people in our system that are technically Master Gardeners, even though they're deceased. So as long as you give back to your community and you meet your hours, you get to be a Master Gardener for life.
Awesome. What a cool program. You know, I don't want to cut anybody short, but we have been going here for a while. is there anything else? I want to talk details about the program one more time for our listeners, but is there anything else we want to talk about before we do that?
We just talked about the projects, the activities we do. I want people to recognize the diversity of them. So we do have the gardens, the growing the vegetables. There's also a green and growing show, which Riedel's Garden Center sponsors, where during the growing season we have weekly programs where we talk about kind of just-in-time information, things you need to know. So there's that opportunity for a master gardener to be part of that. We have the horticulture help desk, which physically resides down at the extension office, but that's where we take calls and people drop in. And this is to directly assist Lauren if she's out of the office, you know, where there's at least somebody there, a warm body that they can talk to. And these are a lot of questions that we punt then to Lauren if we don't have the answer, which is the cool thing about being a master gardener. You don't need to know it all. You just need to know where to go to get the information. So that's really cool. We have the farmer's market. We help with the county fair, exhibiting the garden and the floral exhibits with that. And then the special projects, for instance, the mulch project that came up. So that's kind of an overview of the kinds of things people can do. And they don't need to do all of the above, of course. They can pick one, a pet project, and contribute their 20 hours in that area if they can get the 20 hours there. So a lot of diversity in what the person can do. It doesn't have to just be growing vegetables.
Very good. Okay, well, let's give that information one more time if people are interested in either getting more information about the Master Gardener program or signing up. Where do they go? What do they do?
Yes, so if people want more information about the Master Gardener program, you can contact me directly. Again, my name is Lauren Fick, and the number to the Hayes office, which I'm located out of, is 785-628-9430. And we are also located at 601 Main Street, which is right across the street from the ARC Thrift Store. If you are looking for something online, our website is cottonwood.k-state.edu. And like Margie mentioned before, you just scroll down the left side on a tab. It says Master Gardeners. The whole tab is the exact description of the Master Gardener program. So everything we just talked about, it's all listed right there. And at the very bottom, I believe it's in a purple link, is the application. You click on that, you fill it out, and you bring it back to me. And then 90% of the time, actually, probably 99% of the time, we accept everybody, just as long as you don't have a criminal background, you should be okay to go. And then you get a letter sent to you. And the only other thing is, like we said, technically the deadline is January 13th, but really we'll take people up until the day that the class starts if they are kind of last minute or haven't decided. So January 29th, Kansas Day, is the day that it starts. It's $110, and that comes with the course materials, which is basically equivalent of a 6-credit-hour college class. And then you get a t-shirt, and then we have snacks throughout the training, and we'll provide the meal for the first and last trainings. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I'm missing. Yeah, so if you have questions, you can also email me, lfick@k-state.edu.